Tonight's show is sponsored by Recycle Processes, Inc. and Sakat Foundation of America. Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings be upon you. Good evening. You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago, Illinois. I'm your host, Olivia Richardson. Radio Islam is a live call and talk radio program airing every day from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. And we reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com. You can tap into all of our prior shows as well. To comment on what you hear tonight, give us a call at 312-263-ISLAM. That's 312-263-4752. You can also post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Radio Islam USA or tweet us at Radio Islam USA. And if you want to catch a recording of what you hear tonight, then visit our SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Radio Islam USA. So tonight we are bringing in Muhammad Razvi and his daughter Asma. We'll ask if I pronounced that correct in a second. But basically, so there's an article on the New Yorker that kind of talks about Brother Razvi's, I guess, work in Brooklyn, New York, for Little Pakistan, and sort of the aftermath of 9/11 and how it kind of affected the community, as well as bullying and targeting. So it's a really interesting article. If you want to check it out, it's on the New Yorker, and it is titled, if I scroll up to the top, Fighting for the Immigrants of Little Pakistan. So without further ado, and Brother Razvi is actually the executive director of COPA, which is an organization in Little Pakistan that does specifically that, like, helps immigrants out. So thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
No problem. All right. So for, I guess, catching people up who potentially have not read the article, so you're just, it's kind of like a really detailed account of people getting deported, sort of post 9/11, whether it's on suspicion of terrorism, whether it's just sort of, I guess during that time period, there was heightened security and concerns. And so as they were looking for people who might potentially be terrorists, a lot of people who had expired visas are also getting deported at the same time. So can you maybe, since you were there, can you kind of explain a little bit, like, what the experience was like as you were trying to help out so many people during that, like, confusing time period?
Sure. So right after 9/11... the neighborhood that's known as Little Pakistan in Brooklyn, New York, it was very frightening, because at that moment there was a huge sweep that was happening within the community, where individuals' name matched up on some sort of a database, for example, like a Department of Motor Vehicles, mm-hmm. a database matching, and if a person's name was Muhammad Khan. There's so many Muhammad Khans, and especially in the Pakistani community. So there were, you know, INS agents and other federal agencies coming in and looking for Muhammad Khan. But if they didn't find Muhammad Khan, they would pick up Ali Khan or Javed Khan. And that's what was happening, because at that moment, everyone was trying to, every agency was trying to do their duty. Oh, yeah, we picked up these people. Yet, when they picked up these people and they are, you know, looking into their whereabouts and what's happening and what they did, basically, they forgot to tell the INS that they had moved 10 years ago. So these are the things that were happening with me. And it caused such a fear that many community members, actually were afraid to even come out. And it almost became like a ghost town. Mm-hmm. We had at least 35 stores, approximately, which actually shut down, because so much members that didn't come in, you know, to Little Pakistan to shop anymore. But that's the fear that was happening. And then the special registration program came into place, which was the Bush's administration, in a way, trying to say that individuals who have visas, we want them to register with the INS and the FBI that they are here. And those individuals were put into deportation proceedings. There were about, I think, over 80,000 or 80,000 plus individuals who actually registered with the FBI, INS. And not even one individual was even alleged to have any types of links to terrorism or even the attacks at 9/11. However, they put about 13,000 plus individuals into deportation proceedings. This was just unbelievable, and it was such a scare for the community members. They just, you know, fled. We had an exodus that happened in our community in Little Pakistan of over almost 20,000 people just left. They either went back to Pakistan or they went to Canada, and they were just fleeing from the land of the free, basically.
Wow.
And it was just unfortunate. It was very, very unfortunate. And the story, actually, you could see it on our website under copo.org, C-O-P-O.org.
Yeah.
The story is one of those individuals, Mr. Shahid Ali Khan, who actually registered with the FBI and INS at that time when he was required to, and immediately he was put into deportation proceedings. You know, they went and they picked him up in 2005, and they said, okay, we're going to now deport you. And that's where we came in and we started helping his family.
Yeah. So was COPO started as a, I think in the article it said like it was started beforehand, like when the community was still thriving, just to help out with general issues that any like Pakistani members as they come may need. But as you, as that kind of happened, did you find like your services shifting then to just trying to keep people from being deported or...
Well, we started out as Council of Pakistan organization. We were helping just the Pakistanis at that time because many of them were being picked up and they needed legal services. And the first day I opened up the doors, all I had was it's a sign that said ESL classes, English classes for free.
Hmm.
I had 300 people plus signing for English classes.
Huh?
And we were working on helping individuals find their family members. I remember still today that I used to make phone calls to all these county jails trying to locate if an individual was picked up and the family member came to our stores and my businesses. So I used to run multiple businesses on the block, and my office, which became COPO, was actually supposed to be a fabric store, and I was going to name it Punjab Fabrics because I already had Punjab Grocery, I had Punjab Sweets, and I had a 99 cent store. It was Urdu Bazaar, and this office was going to be a fabric store, and what's supposed to be a fabric store actually became the fabric that held the community together because people were so afraid.
Yeah. For a lot of the immigrants, I guess they are, again, really afraid, and we had, like, I guess you guys had a lot of people fleeing. So, like, were you able to particularly save anybody or stop any deportations at the time, or?
Well, we had we had so many legal clinics. I had multiple attorneys coming in, free legal advice, explaining to people what the what their situations were going to be. And many of them were advised, and these are the steps you have to take. For example, in the case of Shahid Ali Khan, we were able to prevent him from being deported. Other individuals who had, it was called 245I initiative under the Clinton's administration. Basically, 245I was a way for individuals prior to 9/11 who were able to adjust their status, who came into the country, who overstayed. But if they had a sponsor or they fell in love and they got married, these individuals were able to adjust their status. Even these individuals were also put into deportation proceedings. So we were able to prevent, you know, some of the individuals from being deported. However, we found out many individuals were afraid, and community members, they just left. They went to Canada, and all of a sudden Canada was thriving because of all these immigrants bringing in their money. I still remember till today, one of the one of the hairstylists, you know, the barbershop that was right next to Punjab Grocery, he literally, like one day, he just left. And he left his scissors there. He left his, you know, combs there. He left his everything that you could ever have for a barbershop. He just left. And he said, I'm afraid. I'm just leaving. And he just left. And this is what was happening. It was the fear factor.
Wow. And so what was it like? I know your daughter Asma is on the line with us. So Asma, what was that time period like for you? I think in the article it mentioned that there was some bullying going on. So what was that like for your experience?
Well, at the time when 9/11 happened, I was in the fifth grade. And I remember going home early. My mom came to pick us up. And it was just a whole big commotion, and then we saw it on television that, you know, the Twin Towers are down, so I was so confused. We saw the smoke from our backyard, and my father told me that night, he sat us down, me and my sister, and said, you know, you guys have nothing to do with us. It's okay, you know, don't be afraid in school. If anything happens, come and talk to me. And this was the night of. Mm-hmm. We go back to school, and a student sitting next to me starts teasing me and starts picking on me. So he had bullied me for the whole year in fifth grade, and I didn't tell my parents until the end of the year. He used to threaten me that your father is a terrorist, and that if you tell anybody that I bother you, I'm going to tell him. I didn't know what to do. I was just really afraid. He used to call me a terrorist. Walking down the street was difficult for me. I cover, so, you know, you can't really hide that you are a Muslim.
Right.
And so people on the street, I've had incidents that people would come up to me and beat me up for being a Muslim. Sixth grade, I was standing at a bus stop, and a student comes up to me and just, you know, starts throwing quarters at me and tells me to go back to my country. And I was just confused that, you know, this is my country. I was born here. I was born at Korean Hospital. All five siblings, we all were born in Korean Hospital, and I was very proud to be an American. And just because I covered, I just stood out. I was a different one. My father changed my schools after finding out, and also because the schools didn't take any action. Which was very difficult. You know, my father had to, he opened up, even after opening up Popo, he had to change his name to being Mo because nobody would respond to Muhammad.
Right.
And all my friends, you know, stopped being my friends. I didn't have any colleagues to share anything with, even my teachers. I remember in the sixth grade, when I was pushed down the steps and my hijab was pulled off, I went crying to one of my favorite science teachers. And I cried to her, and I said, you know, like, I'm confused why this is happening. And then she goes, you know, it's okay. You're going to have to endure these things because the blame is on Muslims. And
right.
I just felt like, okay, so everything is my fault. But I guess at that age, how are you able to understand that, you know, you have nothing to do with these horrific attacks, which my father had told me. But understanding that became really difficult. And once the incident happened at the bus stop where the girl had thrown the quarters at me, that's when my father first saw it. My father was coming to pick me up, and I was just waiting at the bus stop, didn't know my father was going to come. And we had no cell phones, never needed them, you know. So my father took a U-turn, called the cops, went up to the school. And the security officer, my father tried to explain to the security officer, you know, there are hate crimes going on with my daughter in this school. You know, she was just picked on. She was beaten up at the bus stop. And the security officer said, no, no, you don't know what you're talking about. Just leave, just leave. And we were shoved out the door.
Wow.
That's when my father decided, no, you know, so we need to change our school. So then I changed schools again. And I went to a new school for seventh grade. A lot of issues happened over there, too. You know, out of what is it, 3,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only one covering. Students, girls would come in, they would change their outfits, and then no one wanted to talk to me. No one wanted to affiliate with me. I had some Pakistani friends who lived in my neighborhood. At the time, we were living above Punjab Grocery. And we would walk home, and those were the only group of friends that I had. And I'm proud to say I'm still friends with them today. But my father saw that, you know, it was unsafe for me to walk down the streets like that because many incidents were coming up even on the streets. People are shoving me, calling me names, and I would come home crying to the point where I started telling my parents, I don't want to go to school anymore. And that coming from me was a huge ordeal because I love school. And my parents knew that something was wrong then. My parents said, nope, let's put her into Islamic school then. So then I was put into Islamic school, and I felt like it was like a dream come true. You know, it's like heaven because everyone is wearing a jilbab, everyone's in hijabs, and, you know, it's just a conservative environment. This is where I belong, you know.
Yeah.
These are the people who look like me, who act like me. So I wouldn't have any issues. So I stayed in Islamic school for 3 years. And then my parents were unable to afford it, and we had to go to a public school. And I graduated from New Jersey High School then. We moved to New Jersey for a year. I graduated from there, and I started my college career at Pace University. And I thought, you know, everything is over. It's been years since 9/11 happened, so it wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Oh, boy, it was still an issue. And I had college friends, you know, spread rumors that, you know, Muslims are terrorists and, you know, you shouldn't be friends with them. So one particular student I walked up to then and I said, you know, you're spreading rumors like this. Can I know who I killed? Like, I just went straight up to her because
wow.
I felt like that blame is invalid. You know, it was not me who was in charge of what happened at 9/11, or whatever's happening around in the world. I'm a normal student, an average student who is doing my PhD now in mental health counseling. And at that time, I was actually in nursing school at Pace University. And then I switched over to a combined degree in mental health counseling. And you know, these issues do arise. Like I always share with my professors, it's a never-ending story. And then just adding on, you know, other factors, other acculturator factors that once an immigrant comes into this country, it's very hard for them to adjust. And adding in, hey, you may be part of the team and, like, whatever happened with 9/11 or whatever is happening now with the Paris attacks, London attacks, you know, the psychological distress just becomes, it increases.
Yeah. So was it, like, a little bit, like, disappointing maybe then, like, when you do get to college and you're still kind of going through, like, Islamophobia and still, especially because college is supposed to be, like, a moment of, like, a time of higher education.
I'm sorry, your voice is still so faint. I'm, like, trying to understand your question.
I was just asking, like, when you got to college, were you disappointed to find that there was still Islamophobia, I imagine, just because it's supposed to be a higher education, you know, higher-minded environment?
Yes, I was surprised because I was actually part of several clubs. I was the president of the Visa Club, which was the Voice of International Students Association Club. So I was quite surprised that people are still living in that time period and believe this, I guess, stigma that's with the Muslim population now. And you can't do anything about that. It's just like the stigma with mental health, you know. You can only advocate. You can only stand up and be part of groups and advocate for yourself and for others. So I remember my father would always tell me, the more we stand with others, the more they will stand for us. And, you know, and my father and my mother always taught me that Islam stands for I shall stand for all of mankind. Doesn't matter it's an LGBT community. Doesn't matter if, you know, if it's a Pakistani, if it's a non-Muslim, if it's an Arab, we should stand up for everyone. And so my father used to go around doing protests with every group, and I used to tag along, and that's what I've learned. Today, you know, I advocate for every group out there. I'm part of many organizations, and I believe that the more I am with them, they'll be with me tomorrow when it comes, when, you know, when there's hardships on me.
Alhamdulillah, that's good. So, Dad, what was that like for you as well to witness your daughter go through bullying, and then also, I guess, to know that, you know, your daughter hasn't, is not safe, you know, from everything that everyone else is going through as well?
All right. So, as I was working and understanding what was happening with my daughter, I started to work with the mayor's office at that time. I started working with city, state, and the law enforcement agencies to make sure that they understand what's happening in our community. So one of the biggest things that we did was we started to take surveys. And Asma and my wife and my kids helped me, and others came together, and we did this huge survey with the Human Rights Commission of New York and Mayor Bloomberg's administration. And it revealed all these other issues that were happening, and it was so many children who were getting, you know, hate crimes, discriminations happening to them. And as I was learning this, this really troubled me even more, because I was just fortunate enough to take my kids at that moment out and put them into private schools, but other children were not that fortunate, and they weren't able to do that. And they just brought me back, like, I can't believe it, how much hardship some of these kids are going through. And no fault of their own, they're being stigmatized. And one of the recommendations that came out of the, you know, the survey was enlisting many Muslims into city, state, and law enforcement agencies. And not only just to have them enlisted, but also to work with the youth, where we are able to show the youth that they are part of the American, you know, dream, and they can be part of that dream. And that's what we've been promoting. I mean, we started with something that was supposed to be a six-month office helping the community. It turned into 2 years of me volunteering. It was supposed to be, it was only 1,000 square feet at that time. Now we are 20,000 square feet. We are servicing almost 10,000 people a year, and it's still continuous. We have the first halal senior center, I think, in the East Coast for the Muslim community. We were able to get resources for our Muslim schools for the first time in the history of New York, where many Muslim schools, we were able to help them get funding to get support from the city, so they can provide services for their youth. One of the biggest things we do is with law enforcement. We started the first, we helped to initiate the Muslim Advisory Council to NYPD and Muslim Advisory Council to the FBI. For example, when this ban came in place, you know, the travel ban, immediately we called for a special meeting with the FBI and the NYPD. And the FBI immediately issued a statement that they will not be doing any roundups like they had done before,
okay,
which was very, very good for the community, because the community was in fear again. But it takes time, you know, and we have been working at it. And, you know, recently what's happening with many of the immigrants who actually are in this position as Shahid Ali Khan, we are very worried about those families and their situation. But the important thing is we got to make sure that we all stick together. I'm sure you heard of I Am a Muslim Too rally.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, there were thousands and thousands of non-Muslims standing together for the Muslims. And that was in February 19th with Russell Simmons, Imam Shamsi Ali, and Rabbi Mark Schneier. COPO played a major role in coordinating the logistics and the production of that whole rally. I mean, but these are the things that we are doing. And we continue.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on and, I guess, sharing both of your guys' stories with us and kind of shedding some light into that. I know, I guess, people are probably fearing that again, potentially with this new Muslim ban. So thank you again for your story and for taking the time to talk with us on air on Radio Islam.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if your listeners, anyone has a situation, please, they can contact us. Because the case now coming back with Shahid Ali Khan, mm-hmm. we were in touch with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and they called us last week that they are not going to deport the family.
Okay, wow.
Now, this is one of those cases where, you know, things can happen for people. And if there's anyone out there who's listening who has a situation, please contact us. At least we can pull together and advocate collectively for everyone. We are going to move forward and advocate for anyone that needs help, much as we can. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are wonderful groups. I know there's a large Pakistani population, or South Asian population in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, you can reach into my office via email, or you can contact through my phone number. My phone number is 718-434-3266. My name is Mohammed Razvi. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And we will continue. We'll come back after a break. We'll continue our program on Radio Islam. But again, just thank you guys so much for coming and speaking to us. Assalamu alaikum. And also, Eid Mubarak.
God bless.
Assalamu
alaikum.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. So that was Brother Razvi and his daughter, Asma, just talking about some of their experiences, I guess, post 9/11 and COPO, which is what Brother Razvi has been a part of. They help immigrants out. So if you hopefully never get into that situation, then, yeah, it would be wonderful to, I guess, for you to reach out to them or if you know anybody who may be in that need. But stick with us after the break. We'll continue our programming. We'll listen to some Eid Nasheeds just to finish off the show. So if you have any questions, though, or if you have any comments, give us a call at 312-263-4752. Or you can also post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Radio Islam USA.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Hi, my name is Stanley, and I've been arrested for stealing shoes. I didn't really steal them, but I've been sent to Camp Green Lake anyway. The worst punishment a kid could get. And at Camp Green Lake, we dig holes. Lots of holes. I've only been here a short time, but I think the camp director is up to something. I'm Stanley Yelnats, and I'm covering more than dirt at Camp Green Lake. Explore new worlds. Read my story in the novel Holes by Lewis Sacker. For other great book ideas, visit your local library or log on to literacy.gov. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Radio Islam is pleased to bring you another signature production, Nutrition That Fits, with registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator, Hana El Amin.
This is registered dietitian Hana El Amin for Radio Islam with Nutrition That Fits, giving nutrition advice that fits your life, your needs, and your goals. Today, I'm going to be giving you a recipe for tuna and avocado salad. This recipe is super quick and great when you're looking for a quick and healthy lunch or dinner option. It is loaded with healthy fats from the tuna and the avocado. It's also bursting with layers of flavor that are satisfying and refreshing all at once. So here's how you make it. First, take 2 cans of tuna. Sprinkle with 1 teaspoon each of cumin in either crushed red pepper or ground chili pepper. Then add 1 finely chopped jalapeno. Remove the seeds if you want less heat. Then add 1/2 cup of finely chopped cilantro. Add the juice of 1 medium lime and then add salt to taste. Lastly, dice your avocado, add it to the tuna, and stir. And you're done. If I'm having this for dinner, I'll put it on tostada shells and top with spicy Greek yogurt. You can also put it in a tortilla, serve it with whole grain crackers, or, for a lighter treat, serve on romaine lettuce boats. However you serve it up, this incredibly fast and healthy meal is sure to be a family hit. I know, because when we make it for our family, it disappears as quickly as it was made. If you missed any part of this recipe, you can get it on the Radio Islam Facebook page. Until next time, this is Hannah El Amin for Radio Islam, with nutrition that fits, giving nutrition advice that fits your life, your needs, and your goals.
Welcome back. You're listening to Radio Islam at WCEV 1450 AM Chicago. We reach the world by streaming live at radioislam.com. You can view all of our prior shows. Radio Islam is a call and talk show every night from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. Tonight, for the rest of the hour, we'll be listening to a few couple of Eid Nasheeds just to finish off the celebration. And tomorrow, hopefully, we'll be back with a full program for you. But yes, enjoy, because I still have a little bit of Eid in me. So I hope you also had a wonderful weekend and a wonderful Eid. There was actually a lot going on in Chicago, so I hope everyone had a wonderful, fantastic time. Again, if you have any questions or comments, if you want to know who you're listening to, then feel free. But yeah, enjoy some of our favorite Eid songs.
Takbir, Allahu Akbar. Takbir, Allahu Akbar. These are the days of Eid. Make takbir wherever you are. These are the days of Eid. Allahu Akbar. These are the days of Eid. Sing together, everyone. La ilaha illallah wa lillahi alhamd. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر الله أكبر ولله الحمد
الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر الله أكبر ولله الحمد
نسألك يا من هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الرحمن الرحيم الملك القدوس سلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار.
Happy Ramadan and Ramadan Mubarak. Radio Islam is pleased to bring you Blessed Days, Blessed Names, with the late Amina Asilmi, Allah yarhamha.
Al-awwal,
the first. Allah was here before anything. He preceded all others. There is no question, there was nothing before Allah, and there will be nothing after Allah. Now, when you consider this, that Allah is the first, there is something very important here for you. You should always remember, Allah is first. Keep Him first in your mind, in your heart, in your actions, in your life. Allah before anything. If you have Allah first in your life, then you are following His guidance in every aspect of your life. You are loving, compassionate, and merciful with your spouse. You are understanding with your children. You are a good neighbor. You are a good friend. You are honest in your dealings. If Allah is first in your life, you will do everything in the correct way. If Allah is first in your life, in your actions, you will not make mistakes. If Allah is first in your life, your actions will be of benefit to all of humanity. If you would be safe, keep Allah first. And you keep Him first by knowing what He has said, knowing the Quran, knowing the Sunnah, and applying that to every aspect of your life, how you deal with everyone. That's how you keep Allah first, is by living Islam. ذو الجلال والإكرام صل يا ربنا على حبيبنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. That was the late Amina Asilmi with her reflections on Allah's 99 names. May God have mercy on her soul.
Early before the sunrise, I woke to a familiar sound of hurried holiday hustle and busy, bustling all around me. I threw my sheets, dreams, and blankets and myself out of bed. Waking up so early with wonder for the day that lay ahead. It's that beautiful time where everything seems bright. Every face is smiling, every corner has light. And there's a feeling inside that seems so right. Every eye is shining, every heart has sight. This is our Eid, let blessings increase. And may our smiles and laughter never ever cease. There was a colorful feeling around me, surrounding everywhere, as the smells from the kitchen filled my hunger, decorating the air. Soft-sounding spiritual songs had been turned and turned me on. As I dressed in my very best clothes, ready to ignite the dawn. It's that beautiful time where everything seems bright. Every face is smiling, every corner has light. And there's a feeling inside that seems so right. Every eye is shining, every heart has sight. This is our Eid, let blessings increase. And may our smiles and laughter never ever cease. Walking to the prayer hall, feeling light upon my face, surrounded by believers of every creed, culture, and race. Takbirs fill the room, from the spirits to the halls, as the echoes of salams reverberated beyond the walls. It's that beautiful time where everything seems bright. Every face is smiling, every corner has light. And there's a feeling inside that seems so right. Every eye is shining, every heart has sight. This is our Eid, let blessings increase. And may our smiles and laughter never ever cease. At night, my eyes still open, I lay here in my bed. Memories of my day, painting colors in my head. Slipping off to sleep, my takbir fades away to a hum. I dream of another morning and another Eid to come. It's that beautiful time where everything seems bright. Every face is smiling, every corner has light. And there's a feeling inside that seems so right. Every eye is shining, every heart has sight. This is our Eid, let blessings. blessings increase. And may our smiles and laughter never ever cease. This is our Eid, let blessings increase. And may our smiles and laughter never ever ever cease.
نسألك يا من هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الرحمن الرحيم الملك القدوس سلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار.
Happy Ramadan and Ramadan Mubarak. Radio Islam is pleased to bring you Blessed Days, Blessed Names, with the late Amina Asilmi, Allah yarhamha.
Al-Muta'al,
the Most Exalted. What can we say about this? Is there anything that could compare to Allah? Of course there is not. Everything was made by Allah. Everything was made by Allah. You cannot take that which was created by Him and compare it to Him. It came from Him, but it is not Him. He is the most exalted. He's inexhaustible. He's free from defects. He's above and beyond our power of imagination. There is nothing to be compared to Him. We should remember that He is the most exalted, and He is worthy of being exalted. And be careful with allowing ourselves to be exalted, for we are not worthy of exaltation, only He is. Do not strive for praise, but live to praise. Allah is the most exalted, and we are His humble and obedient servants in all things, if we would call ourselves Muslim.
صلي يا ربنا على حبيبنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم.
That was the late Amina Asilmi with her reflections on Allah's 99 names. May God have mercy on her soul.
High, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. I feel so alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, thank you.
way you make me feel. Every time you come around, you breathe life into my soul. And I promise that I'll try throughout the year to keep your spirit alive. In my heart it never dies. Oh, Ramadan.
نسألك يا من هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الرحمن الرحيم الملك القدوس السلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار.
Happy Ramadan and Ramadan Mubarak. Radio Islam is pleased to bring you Blessed Days, Blessed Names, with the late Amina Asilmi, Allah yarhamha.
Malik al-Mulk,
the Master of Sovereignty. He is supreme, he is independent, he is above and superior to all others. He is supreme in power, in every way. He shares his power with nothing. Allah is independent from all that he has made. And yet he is in constant contact with all that he has made. He is aware of all that he has created. He is aware of our needs. He is aware of our weaknesses. He is aware of our strengths. Allah is the master, the supreme, the independent, the superior. He is our sovereign. He is the one who gives us the guidance, the only true guidance, the guidance which we should follow. He is the one who provides comfort for us. He is the one who provides security for us. Allah is above and beyond, and yet Allah is never separated from a second with His creation. He is with us continually and consistently. We can feel His love. We can feel His magnificence. We can feel His mercy. We can feel His power anytime. Anywhere, if we would choose to. We need to break down the walls that we build between us and Allah, the things that keep us separate from Allah. There's no way that He should be kept separate from you. We cannot survive without our Creator. We cannot love without our Creator's love. Get to know the 99 attributes of Allah and understand them, because they're going to fill your heart with such joy, with such excitement, and with such tranquility. Allah is the master of sovereignty, is the master of it. He does it better than anyone or anything. Read the Quran and come to understand Him. Come to know Him and accept Him in your life.
صلي يا ربنا على حبيبنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم.
That was the late Amina Asilmi with her reflections on Allah's 99 names. May God have mercy on her soul.
All right, you've been listening to Radio Islam, a live call-in talk show every day from 6 to 7 p.m. 7 days a week on WCEV 1450 AM to find out more about tonight's guest and their work. Hop on to soundcloud.com/Radio Islam USA. We also stream, download, and comment on our shows. You can also catch us on iTunes and Google Play and stream straight from your phone. So definitely do that. Also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Radio Islam USA. The executive producer of Radio Islam is Abdul Malik Mujahid. Your producer today has been Olivia Richardson. And our engineer this evening is Gus Rios. Radio Islam is a Sound Vision Foundation production. The views expressed are the views of the host and of the guests, not of Sound Vision Foundation. I'm your host, Olivia Richardson. Join us tomorrow evening for another great show on Radio Islam. The bench.